I am going to take the liberty at this time to accommodate the speaker's schedules and plane flights to, at this point, take item the, I'm sorry, K, we've just had, but item L and A7 before lunch, so that we would take our lunch from 1 to 1:30. And I'd ask the panel then, before they come up on item L, I would ask Mr. Statham, who is a speaker to this agenda item, to please approach. You have up to 5 minutes, sir. Thank you. And I just want to say it's nice to see you again. I remember you in the legislature and during the Duke Majan years.
Madam Chief Justice, members of the council, thank you very much. I try not to remember me too much as a member of the legislature. I'm that guy that got the assembly to study dividing California. However, the Senate said that was not a good idea. And so we remain a state full of challenges that we're attempting to approach now. Let me say this. Since I found an escape plan to get out of the California legislature, I got a job that I have now as president of the California Broadcasters Association. I really didn't realize at the time, even though I came from broadcasting in my previous life, I didn't realize that California was such a huge media state, so now I speak on behalf of almost 1,000 radio and television stations in California. And, of course, we have a number of priorities. Our number one priority is microphones and cameras in the courtroom. And I so much appreciate Chief Justice George for putting together the Bench Bar Media Committee, which did extensive and substantial discussion of cameras and microphones in the courtroom. In my back pocket, I have an iPhone that will eventually take the place and is already taking the place of microphones and cameras. However, in my lifetime, those microphones and cameras will not disappear, and I have to admit that, as you know, as broadcasters, we're quite a bit interested in reality television, but we're much more interested in real television, to put our eyes and our ears in the courtroom without turning into too much reality television or too much Judge Judy, because we know there's a difference between a real courtroom and Judge Judy's courtroom. But sometimes real courtrooms offer even more news and information. And so as good Americans watching radio and television, please don't ever stop. We want to continue to get in there. And I want to mention to you, in just a few minutes, you're going to hear from the president of the California Newspaper Publishers Association, Ralph Aldridge. He and I have met extensively on this issue. And, you know, I started out life as a newsreader and then left a radio station first, then a television station, and found myself in the California legislature, where it became even more interesting to report on television and then to be reported upon as a member of the legislature. It was indeed a trip. So now that the Bench Bar Media Committee has done its good work, Ralph and I, representing all the newspapers, my representing all the radio and television stations, we want to continue to look at media access to the courtrooms, which are so vital to us all. And we're going to do that without expense to the state and with the thanks and benefit of the Bench Bar Media Committee helping us for so long. And so I just want to tell you that we want our microphones and our cameras and our newspapers there, because I think America's at a point where for a judge to say, you know, I really like to have you in the courtroom, now here's a pad and a pencil, so report on this. No, we want a microphone and a camera, but we do understand the judge has to have control of his or her courtroom. We'll continue to look at this issue, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them now. Thank you, Chief Justice.
Thank you, Mr. Statham. Any questions, comment? Thank you.
Thank you.
We welcome the Honorable Justice William J. Murray, the Honorable Justice Stephen Perrin, Mr. Ralph Aldridge, President of the California Newspaper Publishers Association. All three are members of the Bench Bar Media Committee, and Mr. Peter Allen, Senior Manager, Office of Communications. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief Justice, and good morning to you and to the council. It's my privilege to address you on a tough issue whose difficulty was made evident during the vetting process that went out to the various members of the judiciary and the public at large. A little background and why I'm here. First of all, as was introduced, Justice Murray has been on the committee, I think it's from inception, as has Mr. Aldridge. And I'd like to thank Peter Allen also for the work that he has done in giving guidance, direction, and assistance to the committee. The committee was appointed, as was referred to, by Justice George in 2008. And the entire background of that is not entirely clear to me, except the recognition of the need for interface between the media, the bench, and the bar in conducting the business of the courts and the openness of the courts. I learned of it somewhat happenstantially when I was reading, a release from the Supreme Court online that said this committee had existed. And since I was chair of the Criminal Law Advisory Committee, and since major issues that were being discussed directly impacted, I thought, the criminal law itself and the work that we did, I brazenly called Justice Moreno and said, "Hi, can I play too?" And he very kindly contacted the chief, then Chief Justice George, and I was invited, I thought, to be a fly on the wall and to watch and offer such as I could from my experience as chair of the Criminal Law Advisory Committee. A day before the meeting occurred, I was asked if I would then conduct all of the meetings. So I went from fly on the wall to elephant in the room, and it became a thrilling, interesting, and exciting experience. I was greeted with a committee of inordinately talented jurists, media professionals, attorneys, administrators, and academicians who were concerned with only one thing, and that was the most efficient way for the court to do its business publicly and openly, and for the courts to work with the media in accomplishing our joint objective of letting the public that we both have a duty to serve honestly, clearly, and openly in the best possible way, and that is the public of the state of California. We set about our business, and an agenda had been fairly well set, and it became evident that the points that were going to be of greatest difficulty were the three that really jumped quite out, and that would have been media in the courtroom, gag orders, and sealing orders. Those are identified in the materials that you have been presented. The discussions were open, free-ranging, and I thought all directed toward how best the courts could conduct their services, preserving the integrity of the court process and the discretion of the jurist to control the courtroom, while at the same time availing maximum ability to the media to perform its duty. The difficulties arose with the scope and extent of access by the media, and initially the one key sticking point that seemed to emerge was the application made to the courts for media access and the presumption concerning cameras in the courts. The existing rule is there is no presumption, and the judge acts with equanimity, presumably, in making a decision. The rule proposed would have changed that to a presumption that cameras, subject to the judge's control, placement, and the rules with which we are all familiar, would be presumed to be in the courtroom or have a right to be in the courtroom, and then the bench officer would make the appropriate orders concerning the controls of access in accordance with court rules. Also, the gagging issue, the orders on gag rules, and that's pretty much covered by a case that was issued out of the Second District, Hurwitz versus Heflin versus Hurwitz, on gag orders and sealing orders. There was a tremendous concern expressed by the media that they only lately came to the notion that some items were being considered and sealed And they never had any information that any requests were being made. How best could it be accomplished to enable the media to know what was being asked for sealing? How best could the public be made aware of what was actually just going on in the courtroom? The reality that presented itself to me as I listened to this give and take going on, and I was not a member of the committee. I was nominally a liaison between the Criminal Law Advisory Committee and the Benchbar Media Committee. What became evident was everybody there was absolutely dedicated to ensuring that the public got the best information in the best possible manner consistent with the court administering its duty. What we came to realize, what I came to realize, and I tried to put it in as best way I could, but in a day and an age when every lawyer, litigant, writer, newscaster, and Tom, Dick, and Mary on the street carries a complete recording studio, camera, and information dissemination station on their hip to disseminate fact or fantasy in a millisecond, it became incumbent upon us to do the very best we could to ensure that the information that was going to the public at large was accurate, prompt, and prepared by the responsible representatives of a public media that was responsible to the public it served. It's too late in the day to talk about the numbers of persons on internet and other information medias who seem hell-bent to disseminate questionable information. And we have a responsible media that is here to present accurate information to the best of their abilities. It is our duty as a court and our duty to work with the media to ensure that that was accomplished. And I think that is the information that is presented to you and how best we can do it. And the recommendation that comes from the committee is to accept the final report, refer to our recommendations, and refer these matters to the individual and responsible committees for their vetting so that the kind of problem that we ran into and that Justice Murray will comment on will not reoccur. I find it ironic and interesting that in 1995, Chief Justice Lucas, in convening a committee and in issuing, I believe it was Rule 980, discussed filming in the courtroom. The statement of that speaks to how rapidly the environment has changed and the problems have presented themselves in new, unique, and unforeseen ways that make it absolutely incumbent upon us to promulgate rules for the guidance of jurists and of the press so that we can achieve a maximum dissemination of responsible information to the public so that it, the people we serve, have correct and accurate information upon which they can form the judgments inevitably they will make. I think the earlier commentator said, and that's Mr. Statham, I think rightly so, the ultimate reality show on television in the world today really is our courtrooms. And the ultimate reality presentation is made at the 5 o'clock news and the 11 o'clock news, and we have a duty to make sure we get it right and that we're fairly presented. I want to turn this over then to Justice Murray, who will address the specifics of the areas of concern with which we are concerned and that are presented to you. I open myself to any questions that you may have at this time, please.
Thank you. None at this time, but maybe possibly later, Justice Perrin. Thank you.
I thank you all for your attention.
Thank you, Justice Perrin. Chief Justice, members of the council, good morning or good afternoon, I guess, I think. I'll be brief today, both because I know you want to get to lunch and because I have a virus that I guess I understand my colleague from Contra Costa also has, and so my voice isn't 100% today. Let me start off by saying a lot of work and time went into this committee, both by the members of the committee and by staff. The committee completed its final report last December of 2010, and hasn't been able to get to you to make this presentation because of your other pressing business. There were three major criticisms of the committee. One, the committee failed to research and analyze the stated problems, and there's some truth to that. I think there we did not look at, for example, the 1996 report authored by Justice Huffman. Two, the recommendations encroached on judicial discretion. And three, media interests dominated the committee. The criticisms prompted us to withdraw some of the recommendations and alter others. It's clear that they need to be vetted by other folks and more appropriate committees. I do want to address some of the misconceptions, though, that I think I've heard about the committee and the committee's work. The recommendations that originally came out and those that that you have before you today were not driven by the AOC. For example, one of the recommendations that received criticism was a recommendation to install a public relations officer in each of the three regional offices staffed by an AOC person with experience working with the media. That recommendation was made with the understanding that that would be done when funds are available. And actually, that recommendation was made first by me, maybe sitting at this very chair, one of these chairs here, back in April of 2006, during a Judicial Council discussion about public outreach. The committee's recommendations were actually developed by all 22 members over a two-year period of lively discussion and respectful debate. The judicial branch was represented by six judicial officers, including Justice Perrin. Be careful what you ask for, Steve. And the combined experience, I think, of those six individuals was over 145 years as judicial officers, over 100 years as trial court judges, and I think two of us at the time were actually presiding judges. We spoke from our experience, and we brought depth and understanding to the discussions. The controversy, though, generated by the recommendations made it clear to us that the dialogue between the bench, the bar, and the media should continue, and we recommended just that. However, as our Chief Justice said and pointed out, the fiscal crisis that we all face has forced us to curtail some very worthwhile projects, and therefore the committee's work was not extended. I'll turn this over now to Ralph Aldridge, the president of the California Newspapers Association.
Thank you, Bill. I can give a little bit of a background that I think might be helpful to people here today. As Bill noticed, I represent the California Newspaper Publishers Association. We have 800 members. That includes every newspaper of any size or significance in the state, from the Los Angeles Times to the Calaveras Enterprise, which is mine. And before that, I spent 40 years as a trial lawyer. I tried my first case in the City Hall Superior Court. I tried my last case in the courthouse right across the street in Superior Court here in San Francisco in 2008. One of the things that I learned from trying cases is, first, that we have a wonderful system of justice. In this state and in this country, I had the opportunity to try cases outside California as well. What I saw over and over again is that people who came to court as jurors in particular had a wonderful experience. So they came away with a better understanding of the system of justice because of that participation, and they had a tremendous respect for that system because of that. We all know that a system of justice only works in a democracy if it really has the respect and understanding of the citizens. And so when I got into the media business 15 years ago, I also got a little bit more of an appreciation for the role of the media in that. The courts can't educate people about the system of justice by themselves. The lawyers, I could say, as one of them, don't have an interest in doing it except as so far as their case is concerned and their client is concerned. The media are the only ones that can really provide that public education and public exposure that convince the citizenry that they do have a court system that is open, that is freely available to everyone, that operates well, that's careful about all of the decisions that it makes, that takes into consideration all of the facts before making decisions. And so when about 4 years ago, the California Newspaper Publishers Association asked me to look into the prospects of having a statewide bench bar media committee in this state, I felt I was suited to take that job on. I did my research. I looked at all the states around this country. I found very few that had any kind of a bench bar media committee, but I found one very nearby that had a terrific one, and that was Washington State. They've had a bench bar media committee for, I think, 3 decades in Washington State. They've done a tremendous job with that bench bar media committee of revising their rules, of developing a wonderful relationship between judges and lawyers and media that makes their system of justice work much more effectively than it would without that. So when I went to Justice George, Chief Justice George, and brought Chief Justice Jerry Alexander from Washington down here to talk with him and to tell him what they'd been able to accomplish in Washington, Chief Justice George shared that perspective as well, that it was very important to have this kind of a committee on a statewide level to bring those groups together and to ensure that that the people of this state felt that they had complete access to their system of justice and that it was, and that they could see that it was working properly. So we embarked on that. We brought in everyone that we could think of who would be representative of any of the constituencies, all of the associations, and many of the individuals. And we ended up with a tremendous roster of talented people, judges, lawyers, and media people. And we spent a lot of time working hard trying to make reasonable recommendations that took into consideration every angle, how this would affect the lawyers, how this would affect the judges, and how it would affect the media. And I think we came up with a very good set of recommendations. They're in front of you. I want to talk, as everyone has, just briefly about one that's not in front of you, and that is the cameras in the courtroom. And all I really want to do is to say a couple of things about that. First, that it was withdrawn not because anybody on the committee felt that it was not a good recommendation. I think we all felt that. There was one, I think, dissenting vote out of everyone on that committee when we adopted that recommendation. And we went back and looked at it in light of all of the criticism that came. There was no suggestion that it needed to be changed. But there was a decision ultimately that we should withdraw it because we felt, perhaps naively, that if we had more time to be able to sit down and talk with the people who were opposing it, to show them that it works in other places. In Washington State, the rule that we recommended has been in place in Washington State for 7 years. They have had no problems in Washington State with cameras in the courtrooms. All of their Supreme Court proceedings are televised, and most of their trial court proceedings are televised, and there is very, very few cases where cameras and other recording devices are not allowed, and it has not created any problem at all. So we felt we could convince the people who were concerned about that recommendation if we had more time. As Justice Murray said, we unfortunately, budgets are a reality of life, and we have to accept that. And so we recognize that if we're going to continue the work of a bench bar media committee, that we're going to have to do it in some other way. The need for a bench bar media committee has not changed. We need to have some place where those three important constituencies of our system of justice get together on a regular basis and talk about how all of them can do their jobs better. Because we can really only have the best system of justice if all of them are doing their jobs as well as they can be done. So for that reason, Stan Statham and I, on behalf of the broadcast media and the news media, have sat down and made a commitment that we're going to do our best to put together a statewide bench bar media committee that isn't dependent upon public financing, and that brings together all of the associations and the individuals who are interested in serving. And we hope that we have a lot of participation from every sector, including people who were opposing the recommendations that we had made before. This is not an effort to develop a committee that will come in and make a recommendation that's been preordained for any kind of change. But it is hopefully a committee where we can sit down and we can talk about things and arrive at better understanding of each other, and that we can develop reasonable recommendations for ways in which the process could be changed to make it more effective and better for everyone. On the cameras in the courtroom, I would just say two things. One is, there isn't a choice as to whether or not people are going to watch courtroom proceedings on television. The choice is whether they're going to watch real courtroom proceedings or dramatizations. And the fact is that those dramatizations, rather than improving the system of justice and improving the public's conception and understanding of the system of justice, are going to do just the opposite. So just like speech, good speech drives out bad, and it's the only way. We've got to have the real thing there as an alternative to people who are going to see a misconception, a misconstruction, sometimes deliberately so, for entertainment purposes and others, that hurts our system right now. The second thing that I would say about the importance of cameras in the courtroom is, and it's been mentioned before, you cannot ask 21st century journalists to cover something as important as the courts with 19th century tools. Our audiences won't accept that. And if they don't accept that, our coverage is worthless. So I say this not to change your minds on that. I don't know whether any of you have made up your minds about that, but to explain why this committee felt that it was such an important recommendation, and that we felt that we could ultimately, if we had the time, explain the need for cameras in the courtroom to everyone. And hopefully California can once again take the lead and be a pioneer in this field, rather than watching states like Washington out there in front in the right direction. I'd be happy to answer any questions, but otherwise I would say, I urge the other recommendations to this committee, or this council. They are important. They're useful recommendations. I don't think any of them are as important as the cameras, but they are important, and they're useful, and they were carefully drawn. I would invite all of you to participate in a new statewide bench bar media committee, hopefully that can carry on the work of the old one. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Aldrich. Any questions or comments? Judge Rosenberg.
Thank you. This is not a question. It's a comment for the committee. I think the recommendations are fine. I think it's appropriate to have various advisory groups look at them and give feedback. Mm-hmm. I would be remiss if I didn't make a comment on cameras in the courtroom on behalf of trial judges. I don't speak on behalf of the Supreme Court or appellate courts. I'm sure they're delighted to have cameras in their courts. But as far as trial judges are concerned, I don't think any trial judge has a problem with cameras in the courtroom, but it's got to be a judge decision. And you cannot impose on judges an additional requirement of making findings of why they shouldn't be there. I know that's not the current recommendation, but I just wanted to share that with you. Trial judges are already overworked. They already have all kinds of things they've got to do, findings they've got to make. An additional finding, an additional requirement is just an additional onerous level, an onerous burden. The trial judges are concerned about how, in many cases, cameras will taint a potential jury so that defendants don't get a fair trial. They're concerned about the atmosphere that's created in the courtroom, where lawyers start playing to the cameras and jurors start getting intimidated because of cameras. And they're concerned about who makes the decision of who is the media, who is the press. We have bloggers on every corner. Some of the bloggers have wide reading and wide attention. So these are all the kinds of concerns that are about. And I say this with all due respect, because before I went into law, I was in journalism. And I appreciate the needs of 21st century journalism.
If I may presume to respond, There's not a thing that you have said that was not thoroughly and exhaustively discussed in, and properly so. Your comments are entirely appropriate. Somehow we didn't get across to the community that we were to serve the depth of that discussion. Secondly, I was a trial judge for 17 years and an attorney in the courtroom for 12 years before that. I started when I was 8. And your comments certainly fall on receptive ears. I'm well aware of those problems, and I often had cameras in the courtroom, and I found that the press was always receptive to it. The finding that that you're talking about, you know, we have that uncomfortable meshing of the right to a public trial and the control of the trial as we do it. Sometimes it's hard, but I'm sure you know, and the findings that were necessitated or the judge makes are, I think, as the recommendations were, reasonable. And I think in vetting it with judges and with the bar, I think there is a solution to be found.
Could I just make a couple of comments?
Yes, Mr. Aldridge.
First, with respect to the discretion of the courts, that's why we went to the Washington example, because it works. And the only difference between the current California rule and what Washington does is Washington creates a presumption in favor of having the cameras in the courtroom because there's a public right involved there. And it simply requires that there be some good reason for that case that would support some restriction upon the cameras in the courtroom. And the person who's proposing some restriction has the obligation of proving that. And that's why it was important, I think, for us to be able to say, and I've checked with the Washington State judges on this very carefully, they have had no problems whatsoever with that implementation of that rule in Washington State. The judges have not felt that there was an imposition on their discretion. Second, what we found in the responses that were submitted is that under the current California system, which gives judges complete discretion as to whether to have cameras or not, many of the judges who responded said why they didn't think cameras were ever appropriate in a courtroom. So what that means is there is no discretion in those courts that's being exercised today. Those people are making their own rule, and their rule is no cameras in a courtroom. So it's important to change that so that we have the same rules in every court in California, and that those rules do recognize that there's a public right and that there has to be something about a particular case that overcomes that public right. Just as there has to be some reason why you shut the courtroom down entirely and keep the public from being in the back of the room. The camera is no different than another member of the public back there. And that's goes to that third point, which is that the lawyers and the witnesses are going to be intimidated by or are going to play to the cameras. What they found in Washington is that that's not a problem at all. And the second is lawyers and witnesses may be intimidated and play to a live audience, but no one would suggest that we ought to take all the seats out of the courtrooms and not allow any spectators in them either. So finally, I think that the best way to look at this situation is to say there is a public right, to recognize that there's a public right, and to recognize that if you don't have a camera in the courtroom, the vast majority of the public does not have that right as an effective matter. There are 20 or 30 seats in most courtrooms in California. There is no way that you can have 20 or 30 million people be served by those 20 or 30 seats in every courtroom in California. And if it's appropriate for anyone who walks into a courtroom to sit in one of those seats, how could it not be appropriate for everyone in California to be able to see the same thing that they can see from that seat? Thank you.
Thank you.
Call the motion.
Yes. The motion is to the recommendations are on page 2 under the appropriate item 1 and 2. Judge Rubin, did you wish to be heard?
Just briefly.
Okay.
First of all, I wanted to thank the committee for their hard work. This is an important issue. Obviously, I'm president of the California Judges Association. This is an important issue. I was a prosecutor for 20 years. I had one of my trials done gavel to gavel on it was then Court TV, and I can tell you that that there are solutions here to be had. I'm not sure that at least our perception, which we outlined in Appendix G on page 359 of your report, outlined some of our concerns. Obviously, our lingering concern had to do with impinging on judicial discretion. We were gratified that many of our suggestions found their way into your final report. We had hoped to be part of the discussion earlier. We hope, as this goes forward, that we'll be part of the discussions later. We think that with our experience, we have lots to offer in this area. We agree, and I agree, that the more the public sees about what goes on in our courtrooms, the more respect for us they have, the more confidence they'll have in their criminal and civil justice systems, in the judicial officers, and in the court staff, and in the branch as a whole. Again, the solution, I'm not sure, is always in terms of impinging on judicial discretion or even kind of inverting some of the rules, but there are solutions out there to be had. With that, again, I want to also suggest that the judges of this state have been part of a long history of protecting the right of the press in a robust First Amendment. And my colleagues on the bench in no way, in anything I've ever seen, have tried to do anything else. So thank you very much, Chief.
Thank you, Judge Rubin. Judge O'Malley?
Regarding this issue, I've gotten a couple of calls, several calls, from colleagues who at that time were still kind of working through the very lengthy report, and I do thank the Commission for a very thorough and long report. But what they're concerned about, or what the calls that came to me, what those colleagues were concerned about, is part of the recommendation is asking that these recommendations be dispersed, somewhat scattered, among many different entities. Such as advisory committees, different divisions, and then there's one reference to a vague other entities. Not quite sure who that would be or what goals or rules or what things they could do or authority they would have to accomplish these things. And that was somewhat worrisome to some people about what's going to happen with these recommendations and where they're going to go. What's important is that we want to have some say, as you well learned. Judges want to be... Have their day and have their feelings and thoughts, you know, being able to be vetted on this issue because it's close to home. It's how we work. It's where we work. And so I'm with regard to any forward movement on any of the recommendations, there just is some concern about kind of the vagueness of how these recommendations are to be scattered and dispersed and then what's to happen with them after that. And what they want to make sure is that whatever happens to these recommendations before anything goes forward is that they are fully vetted in whatever form, shape they take after they go off to whatever committees, entities, whatever that is, and other organizations.
So are you seeking at all to amend recommendation number two?
Well, I don't know, Chief, if you want to form some group to oversee this or if there's going to be just have them really scattered amongst, different places. So I there's a concern about how these, on a very sensitive issue, how these ideas and recommendations are going to be spread out.
Hold on one moment. Okay.
I would just make a motion to follow the recommendation. We accept the report and we take it to the next step. Is what they want to do.
Could I suggest a friendly amendment to that?
Yes.
To accommodate your concerns, that number two, we just add the words including but not limited to the trial court presiding judge's advisory committee and the court executive's advisory committee.
That's fine.
Is that acceptable?
Yes.
Then I'll second the motion.
Second.
Thank you. So I believe Judge Herman.
Yeah, I just joined with Judge Rosenberg and my colleague Judge Rubin from as CJA president. this from the CJ board's perspective, and I'm not speaking on behalf of the council, but as a member of CJ board, the proposals did raise obvious concerns, as is indicated by our response. It's one of the biggest kind of issues that fell in our laps in terms of the concerns of trial court judges, and not just based upon the discretion limitations piece. You know, personally, I was on my local court's bench bar media committee, and as a trial judge, I fairly routinely grant media requests as long as they're timely. But in addition to the discretion issues, there's also, you know, in the current budget arena, with all of the work that we have to do as trial judges and all of the reports that we have to make and forms that we have to fill out, there's just a real burden on the courts, both trial judges and staff, in terms of some of the committee's original recommendations. And I join with my colleagues as well in thanking you at this point for backing off on some of those recommendations, so again we can have the bench bar media dialogue, which is important. And I salute the idea of a statewide bench bar media committee. The bench bar media committee in our community has worked extremely well in terms of smoothing things out and addressing issues amongst bench bar media. So thank you for all your good work.
Thank you. So the motion is, as stated in item one, under the recommendation, is to receive the final report of the Bench Bar Media Committee and to, as amended, direct the interim administrative director of the courts to refer the committee's recommendations to the appropriate judicial council advisory committees, including but not limited to TCPJAC and CEAC, comma, the administrative office of the courts, divisions, comma, and other entities for further study and consideration. All in favor of the recommendation, say aye.
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 Any opposed? The two recommendations, as amended, item number two, are approved. Thank you for your hard work on this controversial subject.
Thank you.